father's household and go to the land I will show you. I'll make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I'll make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you." So Abram left as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran. And they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abram traveled through the land as far as the site of the great tree of Moreh at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land, but the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord, who had appeared to him.
Baruch ata Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, asher natan lanu Torah emet ve'olam eta betocheinu. Baruch ata Adonai noten haTorah.
Blessed are you, Lord our God, ruler of the universe, who gave to us the Torah of truth and life everlasting planted in our midst. Blessed are you, Lord, giver of the Torah. Well, as Mike said, we're going to talk a bit about Purim tonight. We're not actually celebrating Purim. It's not till Wednesday night, and we're not nearly in as jovial enough mood. You know, Purim is big party night. You know, if you're in Israel, Purim actually looks a lot like Halloween. It's a massive celebration. It's everyone in costumes everywhere. If you're in the Hasidic Jewish sector, even in the States, you celebrate Purim as one of two traditional days. You get so drunk that you actually traditionally can't tell the difference between Haman and Mordecai. That's the saying in Yiddish. So it's a traditional day of getting totally smashed. That's if you're Hasid. I'm not a Hasid, so, and we're not Wednesday, so I'm sober for the most part. But I thought before we'll start with, you know, Purim is this kind of crazy time, so I thought I'd start with some important jokes. These are eternal Jewish truths from the Bubi's Talmud. These are truths, again, from Bubi's Talmud. The optimist sees the bagel, the pessimist sees the hole. If it tastes good, it's probably not kosher. Never pay retail, always whisper the names of diseases. One mitzvah can change the world, two will just make you tired. Never take a front row seat at a bris. Next year in Jerusalem, this year, how about a nice cruise? A bad matzo ball makes a good paperweight. And lastly, if you can't say something nice, say it in Yiddish. Okay, good. Sorry, it's Purim, you know, got to be a bit goofy to start. But I thought what we'd actually do, one of the most traditional things, and what we'll do for most of it is rather than a sermon so much, is to really read the Megillah. To read the story of the book of Esther. We won't do it entirely. I've cut out of many pieces. But generally, it's the book of Esther in the scripture, and we'll read the story. This is why we are to celebrate Purim, because of the very events here. So I thought we'll actually read it. If you want, it's not, like I said, we don't have a bunch of groggers to pass out. But if you want to boo at Haman and yay at Mordecai, you're more than welcome to. And feel, I'll leave that up to you. As you feel moved. Now, this is what happened during the time of Xerxes. Xerxes, who ruled over 127 provinces stretching from India to Kush. At that time, King Xerxes reigned from his royal throne in the citadel of Susa. And in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his nobles and officials. Queen Vashti also gave a banquet for the women in the royal palace of King Xerxes. On the seventh day, when King Xerxes was in high spirits from wine, he commanded the seven eunuchs who served him to bring before him Queen Vashti wearing her royal crown. And many people think only her royal crown. In order to display her beauty to the peoples and nobles, for she was lovely to look at. But when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. Then the king became furious and burned with anger. Therefore the king issued a royal decree that Vashti is never again to enter the presence of King Xerxes, and let the king give her royal position to someone else who is better than she. Then the king's personal attendants proposed, "Let a search be made for beautiful young virgins for the king, Again, I'm kind of skipping through. It's a be a huge reading otherwise. Then let the girl who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. And this advice appealed to the king, and he followed it. Now there was in the citadel of Susa a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin named Mordecai, who had been carried into exile from Jerusalem by King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, among those taken captive with Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Mordecai had a cousin named Hadassah, whom he had brought up because she had neither father nor mother. This girl, who was also known as Esther, was lovely in form and features, and Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. When the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many girls were brought to the citadel of Susa. Esther was also taken to the king's palace. Esther had not revealed her nationality and family background because Mordecai had forbidden her to do so. Every day he walked back and forth near the courtyard of the harem to find out how Esther was and what was happening to her. Before a girl's turn came to go in to King Xerxes, she had to complete 12 months of beauty treatments prescribed for the women, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 with perfumes and cosmetics. She was taken to King Xerxes in the royal residence in the 10th month, the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. Now the king was attracted to Esther more than to any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. But Esther had kept secret her family background and nationality, just as Mordecai had told her to do, for she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions as she had done when he was bringing her up. During the time Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot and told Queen Esther, who in turn reported to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the two officials were hanged on a gallows. And all this was recorded in the book of the annals in the presence of the king. After these events, King Xerxes honored Haman, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. Then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" But day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated, for he had told him he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. Then Haman said to King Xerxes, "There is a certain people dispersed and scattered among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom, whose customs are different from those of all other people, and who do not obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I'll put 10,000 talents of silver into a royal treasury for men who carry out this business." So the king took his signet ring from his finger and gave it to Haman, the enemy of the Jews. He said, keep the money," the king said to Haman, "and do with the people as you please." So dispatches were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces with the order to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and little children, on a single day, the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. And just before I go on for a second, you know, that may sound like a crazy thing, but keep in mind, this is the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians, and their kingdom was so enormous. I mean, it stretched all the way to the very part of Greece, you know, through Turkey, clear over to through India, you know, up, this is Iran, you know, the Persians. And, you know, how do you keep a kingdom that big? You are vicious like you can't believe. And if there's even a hint of someone trying to raise even a hand against it, squash them. So Haman comes to him and says, "These Jews, they don't keep your customs really, and they don't obey us." And he goes, "I'll kill them all." Sounds crazy to us now, but that would have been what you would do. "Oh, there's some dissent? Squash them all. And no one else would ever try that against us." I mean, that's just how the view is. This is not, you know, it's just very realistic. When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. In every province to which the edict and the order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting and weeping and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. And she spoke to her, and Mordecai urged her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead for her people. But Esther replied, "All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death. The only exception to this is for the king to extend the gold scepter to them to spare their life." Mordecai answered, "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows, but that you have come to a royal position for such a time as this." Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, "Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will fast as you do. And when this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So on the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the palace in front of the king's hall. And the king was sitting on his royal throne in the hall facing the entrance. And when he saw Queen Esther standing in the court, he was pleased with her. And he held out to her the gold scepter that was in his hand. And so Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. And the king asked, "What is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom it will be given you." "If it pleases the king," replied Esther, "let the king, together with Haman, come today to a banquet I have prepared for him." "Bring Haman at once," the king said, "so that he may do what Esther asks." So the king and Haman went to the banquet Esther had prepared. As they were drinking wine, the king asked Esther, "Now what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be granted." Esther replied, "My petition and my request is this. If the king regards me with favor, if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come tomorrow to the banquet I will prepare for them. Then I will answer the king's question." Haman went out that day happy and in high spirits. But when he saw Mordecai at the king's gate and observed that he neither rose nor showed fear in his presence, he was filled with rage against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. Haman told his family and friends, "I am the only person Queen Esther invited to accompany the king to the banquet she gave. But all this still gives me no satisfaction as long as I see that Jew Mordecai sitting in the king's gate." His wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Have a gallows built 75 feet high and ask the king in the morning to have Mordecai hanged on it. Then go with the king to the dinner and be happy." This suggestion delighted Haman, and he had the gallows built. That night the king could not sleep. Or is that very night? So he ordered the book of the Chronicles, the record of his reign, to be brought in and read to him. And it was found recorded there that Mordecai had exposed two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who had conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. "What honor and recognition has Mordecai received for this?" the king asked. "Well, nothing's been done for him," his attendants answered. The king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the palace to speak to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows he had erected for him. His attendants answered, "Haman is standing in the court." "Oh, bring him in," the king ordered. When Haman entered, the king asked him, "What should be done for the man the king delights to honor?" Now Haman thought to himself, "Who is there that the king would rather honor than me?" So he answered the king, "Well, for the man the king delights to honor, have them bring a royal robe the king has worn and a horse the king has ridden, one with the royal crest placed on its head. Then let the robe and the horse be entrusted to one of the king's most noble princes. Let them robe the man the king delights to honor and lead him on a horse through the city streets, proclaiming before him, "This is what is done for the man the king delights to honor." "Go at once," the king commanded Haman. "Get the robe and the horse and do just as you have suggested." "For Mordecai, the Jew, who sits at the king's gates, do not neglect anything you have recommended." So Haman got the robe and the horse, and he robed Mordecai and led him on horseback through the city's gates, proclaiming before him, "This is what is done for the man the king delights to honor." Afterward, Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman rushed home with his head covered in grief and told Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had happened to him. His advisors and his wife Zeresh said to him, "Since Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him. You will surely come to ruin." While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurried Haman away to the banquet Esther had prepared. So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther. And as they were drinking wine on that second day, the king asked, "Queen Esther, what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be granted you." Then Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor with you, O king, and if it pleases your majesty, grant me my life. This is my petition. And spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold for destruction and slaughter and annihilation. If we had merely been sold as a male and female slave, I would have kept quiet, because no such distress would justify disturbing the king." King Xerxes asked Queen Esther, "Who is he? Where is the man who dared to do such a thing?" Esther said, "The adversary and enemy is this vile Haman." Then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs attending the king, said, "A gallows 75 feet high stands by Haman's house. He has made it for Mordecai, who spoke up to help the king." The king said, "Hang him on it." So they hanged Haman on the gallows he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's fury subsided. That same day, King Xerxes gave Esther the estate of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, and Mordecai came into the presence of the king, for Esther had told him how he was related to her. Then the king took off his signet ring, which he had reclaimed from Haman, and presented it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed him over Haman's estate. Esther again pleaded with the king, falling at his feet, weeping. She begged him to put an end to the evil plan of Haman the Agagite, which he had devised against the Jews. Then the king extended the gold scepter to Esther, and she arose and stood before him. "If it pleases the king," she said, "and if he regards me with favor and thinks it the right thing to do, and if he's pleased with me, let an order be written overruling the dispatches that Haman, son of Hammedatha, devised and wrote to destroy the Jews in all the king's provinces. For how can I bear to see the disaster fall on my people? How can I bear to see the destruction of my family?" King Xerxes replied to Queen Esther and to Mordecai the Jew, "Because Haman attacked the Jews, I have given his estate to Esther, and they have hanged him on the gallows. Now write another decree in the king's name in behalf of the Jews as it seems best to you, and seal it with the king's signet ring, for no document written in the king's name and sealed with his ring can be revoked." At once the royal secretaries were summoned on the 23rd day of the third month, the month of Sivan. They wrote out all Mordecai's orders to the Jews and to the satraps, the governors, the nobles of the provinces stretching from India to Cush. These orders were written in the script of each province and language of each people, and also to the Jews in their own script and language. And Mordecai wrote in the name of King Xerxes and sealed the dispatches with the king's signet ring and sent them by mounted couriers who rode fast horses especially bred for the king. The king's edict granted the Jews in every city the right to assemble and protect themselves, to destroy, kill, and annihilate any armed force of any nationality or province that might attack them, and their women and children, to plunder the property of their enemies. The day appointed for the Jews to do this in all the provinces of King Xerxes was the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar. That's this coming Wednesday. A copy of the text of the edict was issued as law in every province and made known to the people of every nationality, so the Jews would be ready on that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. And the couriers riding the royal house horses raced out, spurred by the king's command, and the edict was issued from the citadel of Susa. And Mordecai left the king's presence wearing royal garments of blue and white, a large crown of gold, and purple robe of fine linen, And the city of Susa held a joyous celebration. For the Jews, it was a time of happiness and joy, gladness and honor. In every province and every city, wherever the edict of the king went, there was joy and gladness among the Jews with feasting and celebrating. And many people of other nationalities became Jews because of... Many people of other nationalities became Jews because fear of the Jews had seized them. And on the 13th day of the 12th month, the month of Adar, the edict commanded by the king was to be carried out. And this day the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, but now the tables were turned, and the Jews got the upper hand over those who hated them. And the Jews assembled in the cities and all the provinces of King Xerxes to attack those seeking their destruction. No one could stand against them, because the people of all the other nationalities were afraid of them. And all the nobles of the provinces and the governors and the king's administrators helped the Jews because fear of Mordecai had seized them. Mordecai was prominent in the palace. His reputation spread throughout the provinces, and he became more and more powerful. And the Jews struck down all their enemies with the sword, killing and destroying them. They did what they pleased to those who hated them. In the citadel of Susa, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 people. And the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the enemy of the Jews, as well. But they did not lay their hands on any of the plunder. The king said to Queen Esther, "The Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and the 10 sons of Haman in the citadel of Susa. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now, what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? It will be granted." "If it pleases the king," Esther answered, "give the Jews in Susa permission to carry out this day's edict tomorrow also, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged on the gallows." So the king commanded that this be done, and an edict was issued in Susa, and they hanged the 10 sons of Haman. And the Jews in Susa came together on the 14th day of the month Adar, and they put to death in Susa 300 men, but did not lay their hands on their plunder. And they recorded these events, how they got relief from their enemies. And I'll end there. As it says... They carried out and all his. Let's see. King Xerxes imposed tribute throughout his empire to its distant shores. All his acts of power and might, together with a full account of the greatness of Mordecai in which the king had raised him, are they not written in the book of the annals of the king of Media Persia? Mordecai the Jew was second in rank to King Xerxes, preeminent among the Jews and high in esteem by his many fellow Jews, because he worked for the good of his people and spoke up for the welfare of the Jews. We'll end it there. So what do we make of a story like that, huh? We celebrate this now to celebrate that story. I think there's a couple very interesting pieces of it. I mean, one reason I read from the promise of Abraham initially, because that was the great promise, the covenant God made with Abraham, that I will make you into a people, and through you all the peoples of the earth will be blessed. If the Jews could be annihilated, of course, that covenant would be broken, which you could say is one of the reasons why, for many people think, is one of the key reasons for anti-Semitism in the spiritual realm, is that, you know, God's reputation is sensed at stake in the Jewish people. And Haman, you know, Haman tries, as with many people in history, of trying to kill the Jewish people, and they could not. And you remember that one little line, too, that even Haman's wife told him, you know, "Mordecai, before whom your downfall has started, is of Jewish origin. You cannot stand against him. You'll surely come to ruin. You know, he who blesses you will be blessed, he who curses you will be cursed." And here was a classic example of that being played out. That God's faithfulness to the people of Israel, that you cannot get rid of them. And important about that is realize that God is faithful, what he says will be done. And we know when God says he'll be faithful to us, he will be. When he says he'll be there and not leave us nor forsake us, he won't. And we know God's faithfulness to Israel, we can understand his faithfulness to us. I think a second important point is there's something really missing. Did anyone notice any missing words anywhere in that whole story that's kind of odd for the Bible? Any missing characters in the book of Esther? God, that's a pretty big missing one, isn't it? God's not mentioned anywhere in the whole book of Esther. Not the Lord, not God, nothing. Pretty odd, huh? That's a book of the Bible, huh? But was God did he appear anywhere in the book? In many ways, he's everywhere in the book, isn't he? But the book of Esther is written kind of the way our lives are written, isn't it? You know, it's as if someone, you know, you prayed and something happened, and if someone was writing it, they couldn't say that God did something, could they? All they could say is, you know, you prayed or you fasted, and then this person walked in and these circumstances happened. You know, that's the point of view of the writer. He's telling you the events, what's happening. He's not pretending to be omniscient or understanding why anything's happening. He's merely saying, here's what happens. You know, it's as if the book of Esther is challenging us to believe these circumstances happened without God's intervention. I mean, God's hand of coincidences is all over the place, isn't it? I mean, this strange feast that happens at the start, this strange circumstance with Vashti, she goes off, this strange beauty pageant, and Esther suddenly gets lifted up. And when you look at it, you're supposed to look at it and understand that, you know, that God actually is working the circumstances for a person like Esther to come into it, knowing the future, knowing what's going to happen, to have a person in the exact place it needs to be come the circumstances that require it. I mean, you look at it, and that's how you're supposed to see that. You see that God's actually working in the midst of things in ways that you can't understand what the purposes are to accomplish his will that he foresees will be needed. And you ask yourself a coincidence, where's God speaking with the whole thing with and then Mordecai finds out about these events that happen. You know, two guys who are plotting against it. He gets his name written in it, nothing gets done for him. Then on the very night Haman builds the gallows. He's out there and he's about to walk into the door and say, hey, I want Haman killed and put on that gallows. Well, that very night before, the king coincidentally has a dream. Can't sleep. Wakes up and goes, I don't know why, this strange desire to read the chronicles of my reign. I don't know why. I just feel like I want to do that. He reads it down there and goes, huh, Mordecai, what's been done for him? Huh. Oh, Haman's out here. Maybe he'll know what we should do for him. And you look on the outside, you're supposed to see that God is just structuring this. Even at the very point of Haman to carry out his, you know, one day later, right? One dream off, one night thing, Mordecai's hanged. But rather than Mordecai being hanged, quite the opposite, isn't it? He's taken around town with the very man who wants to hang him, leading the horse, declaring, this is what's done for the man that God delights to honor. Like God's hand is on that. And even as the things looked as bad as it possibly can for the Jewish people, I mean, an edict listed they're going to be destroyed and killed, yet God did not forsake them nor leave them. Nor was that cursing able to be carried out. And in fact, you know, you curse them will be cursed. So God was faithful and he carried out his hand upon him. And again, why is that so important for us? You know, that's the way God works in our lives. We can't prove to anyone God's ever done a darn thing in any of our lives, can we? Yet we have eyes to see it, don't we? You know, you couldn't have proved at the time that God had raised Esther to bring up there. In fact, the book doesn't even say that. Right? Esther just did. You can't prove that God woke the king up, gave him the sense to open up the chronicle books. Yet you're a fool not to believe it. It almost challenges you. How are you going to believe the circumstances that happen around you? Are you going to have the faith to believe that everything's coincidence? It's faith too. You see those events around you. It challenges you to almost begin to watch and look for God's hands being around you, how God works around you and what he does. And to realize that he is guiding these circumstances, that he's preparing the way before you walk in it. He's raising up people in your lives. He's opening up doors. And you don't understand him. But you know, you believe that God is faithful. You believe when God says he sees things, he does things. He loves you. He desires to bless you. He has great things he wants to do through you and in you. That he's doing it. Even though the circumstances don't look so good. Right? The circumstances, you're going, this is God working an edict to kill everybody and across this country. We're in the midst of this kingdom of these horrible people, the Persians and the Medes. There's a gallows being built for Mordecai. Yet God was on it. You know, God's on it, things in our lives. And again, you can't prove it. I was I was working at the hospital here, St. Elizabeth's, in the substance abuse unit. And one young guy who was there for detox. And he's a young guy. He's just like, you know, asking, I don't know how I ever got into this state. You know, if you don't know, around here, heroin's huge. And it's really an incredible tragedy. And this kid goes, I don't know how I got wrapped in this. I don't know how I ever managed doing this, but I'm terrified now. I can't believe I'm here. And he goes, if I go back out where I live, I'm just going to fall into it. I think I'm going to die. I don't know what's going to happen. And he goes, you know, he was asking, he asked me to come. He was an atheist. He goes, I don't know. I was around something, but I don't believe in anything. And I don't know anything you can do. I said, you know, we can pray and ask God that he would do something. He would find some place where you can go. That's not this. Because in none of the programs, none of the houses, none of those have, he can't go anywhere else. He's stuck going back there, and he's going to get out tomorrow. And we sat there and we prayed. I prayed for him. I said, God, I pray that you will show yourself, that you will open up a door, and, you know, something will happen for him that he will not have to return that and fall back into this. And done praying, I left. You know, I didn't see him for 2 weeks, right? I see him 2 weeks later, and I'm in the outpatient. I do a little spirituality group there. He comes to that group, and he sees me. He goes, you're not going to believe it. When you got done praying, you left. The person, the head of the program, comes running up to me, and she goes, I've never seen this happen before, but the place at this one place just opened up, and I can get you there, and you can go right there. And he looked at it and went, you know, it was like this. You know, he walks out, leave, boom, door opens, and he goes right in there. And then 2 weeks later, he's in this whole group of 20 people, and we're talking, and most of them, you know, don't believe in God or know, how do I even think about this? And he stands up there and he basically tells them all, you know, never in my life before have I ever believed there's a God, but now for the first time in my life, I actually believe there's someone out there. And I'm praying in the evening and I'm praying in the morning, and I walk out and I have a hope that I never had before. You know, I don't got this whole thing figured out and I don't got this thing fixed, but the first time in my life, I really believe there's someone there. You know, could he prove to them that God had done this, that God had opened up this door? No. But he began for the first time in his life to see that God was there, that God was ordering things around him. You know, I don't know what you're all going through. And sometimes it's easy sometimes to feel forsaken, you know, to feel that I don't understand these circumstances, what's going on. But, you know, God is faithful and God is there. And I think in many ways God challenges us to put on those glasses that help us to see his hand in our lives and the lives of those people around us. He is Emmanuel, God with us. And that's what he promises to be. Let's pray. Lord, thank you that you are with us. Thank you that you've won our hearts and you've given us this thing we can't prove, the sense that you are actually with us and seeing us, and that you hear us. And that you see things we can't see, you understand things we can't understand. It's life's a mystery to us, Lord. But knowing that we have you is what gives us this hope and strength as we walk out, and a joy and all the gifts that surround us and all your blessings. Let us live faithful lives before you. Give us faithful hearts of prayer. Give us eyes to see your hand. And give us mouths to declare your goodness and your praise and our faith in you. We praise you and exalt you. In Yeshua's name we pray. Amen.